It's here and now. So you say you want to be a chef, not a cook who, yes, cooks the food, but a chef who creates the menu, sometimes in a high-powered restaurant for hundreds of demanding patrons. Well, first you have to be a sous chef, a perpetual Mark Antony to chefs Julius Caesar, as our next guest puts it, a faithful administrator who can also call upon cooking skills at a moment's notice.
Since there is rarely only one guest ordering food in the dining room, it's rarely possible to do only one thing at a time. While one hand waggles a saucepan of demi-glace, the other lights the burner beneath the sautoir to make it hot for the next piece of fish due to go down. While one hand lays that piece of fish in a drop tray to be seasoned, the other hand reaches for the salt. If you spin away from the stove to toss a piece of trash into the bin, you take the opportunity to grab a fresh side towel from your station before spinning back. When your hands are full of mise en place you've just pulled from the fridge, a soft hip check brings the fridge door home. To take a pan from the stove, open the oven door, place the pan in the oven, and close the oven door is one fluid motion. While you read through the tickets on board, you keep busy cutting, chopping, stirring, sniffing, listening, all with a sense of urgency.
Sous chef Michael Gibney reading from his new book, Sous Chef, 24 Hours on the Line, a window into the hectic restaurant life in often excruciating, oops, the nuts roasting for the pâté just burned, detail. And Michael joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Michael Gibney, welcome.
Thank you so much.
What is it about working in the restaurant industry that is so compelling, not just to write about, but compels people to do it? And in your book, you illustrate how muscular it is. And well, how would you characterize it in a couple of words? How would you characterize being a sous chef?
Just by the one word, workhorse. That's a position where you find yourself doing probably the most work you'll ever do in your career, because you have to sort of behave a little bit like a cook and also behave a little bit like a chef. You're somewhere in between the two, so you have to do the jobs of both.
Let's tell us more about that. Mark Antony to Julius Caesar, who executes a chef's orders. What is a sous chef?
You're responsible essentially for managing the restaurant so that chef can focus on coming up with a menu or refining things as he or she sees fit. You're there to do the sort of daily business of running the place.
What about your relationship to the chef? It feels like a large dollop of respect and a huge dollop of fear.
I don't know if I would necessarily say fear. There's tension, though, because as a sous chef, like I said, you're no longer a cook, but you're also not the chef yet. So you're in this weird limbo between the two. And it's easy to start thinking, oh, well, I want my name to be on the menu or over the door. And you're constantly questioning yourself as to whether or not you're ready for that. Because, of course, with all the credit and all the respect comes a whole bunch of responsibility.
Which is why it's so intense in the kitchen. You move us through the day of you checking everything out, making sure the people who are actually prepping the foods are doing what they're supposed to do. And now, you know, you're actually in the kitchen. And you say, of all the conditions that can disrupt a kitchen's harmony, anger is probably the most dangerous. Why is it so intense in a kitchen?
Cooking professionally requires a lot of work. So everybody that participates in that is working really hard. And for an error on somebody else's part to create an emergency for them is a frustrating moment. The other thing is that it's such a moment-by-moment activity that to foul up hours of work with 1 second of inattention creates irreparable problems.
Well, because you're part, that's why they call it a line. Everybody's part of a line.
Yeah, well, now Escoffier, Auguste Escoffier, about 150 years ago, when sort of outlining the way a professional kitchen should be set up, called it the brigade de cuisine. And I don't think that it's an accident that he borrowed that term from the military.
Yeah. And you also point out how important it is to sort of keep the anger in check because everyone is armed with knives.
Well, in most kitchens, certainly not in the kitchen I describe in the book. I like to believe that in most kitchens, nobody's actually going to harm one another. We respect each other too much to do that. But it is important to keep a positive mental attitude, because when your attitude goes off, you can taste it in the food and you can see it in your performance. And ultimately, we're there to feed guests, you know, and they trust that we're going to feed them something that's good and gets them their money's worth and that keeps them healthy and safe, you know, to nourish them. And I think once you have a negative attitude about that task, you've lost sight of what you're here to do in the first place.
One of the most interesting things that struck me is that as sous chef, you're also in charge of, once the chef decides what he wants the menu, he or she wants the menu to be, you have to make sure that the components are there. For instance, for this one particular menu, you might have to dig through the storeroom and find mustard oil, cornichons, and golden raisins. If they aren't there, it's your fault for not maintaining them. Later, there's a prep cook making turnips, and you have to know the steps to prep turnips. I mean, I can't even understand that paragraph of prepping a turnip.
All the things you have to know. That's what I mean. I think the sous chef has got sort of a lot of responsibility as the one who typically will be the one purchasing the food, maintaining all the pars and the different walk-in boxes and the storerooms, and then manage the execution of all the dishes on the menu. Chef, of course, will demonstrate how he or she wishes for things to be done, but then from there you're expected to sort of enforce those instructions with all the cooks. So you need to know everything about all the different ingredients, all the different preparations, the techniques, the recipes, the equipment. You know, if the equipment is finicky or on the fritz, you're expected to be able to figure out how to get it working properly or call the technician who will come in and do so. You're responsible for total management of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And ultimately, chef is the end of the line, but you don't want it to get to chef. You know, you don't want chef to be the one finding out that this isn't working and he or she needs to step in and take control because he or she's got better stuff to do.
Amazingly long days, then late nights. And not every sous chef gets to be the chef with the name and lights. Do people burn out?
Oh, absolutely. I think you age out. I think you physically, after a certain age, become incapable of participating in this sort of very physical activity. And then mentally, the strain, you know, because of all these things you need to know and think about, it gets difficult and frustrating to continue to do that, I think. So chef years can be measured, I think, more closely to dog years than to human years. I don't mean to say, though, that it's not without reward. I mean, the money, it's not about the money that we make or the titles that we have. There has to be some other calling, which I think, I hope, is the idea of feeding people and working really hard on behalf of somebody else with a team of people also working really hard in service of another. I think there's something really beautiful and rewarding in that, and that, I think, is what keeps people doing it.
Michael Gibney, one question, though. You are a sous chef. You're involved with food. Why do you smoke so much? The smoking breaks. It's like, seems like the only break in the action that anybody from the kitchen gets. But it destroys your taste buds.
Well, I agree. I do take care to say that it's something that, you know, it's a bad habit. And the best chefs stopped smoking or never started smoking to begin with long ago. But I do think, as you say, it's this little break that you get from the action, a little break away from the heat, and a moment for you to recollect your thoughts and reconsider what it is that you've got ahead of you and what you've accomplished so far. To take a deep breath, get some fresh air, and
pollute it.
fresh, polluted, gross, tarry air, and reassess the situation, you know, take stock of what's going on.
Well, you left a great image, though, with this reader of all over Manhattan, people in the same outfits, those clogs and pants and white shirts, sneaking out to loading docks, you know,
yeah.
trying to get it.
Well, it's true, and I hope that people, you know, will start to notice them. I guess that's the point of the book, is to help people start to notice the folks who are behind the scenes.
Yeah.
In a new way, at least.
That's Michael Gibney. His book is Sous Chef, 24 Hours on the Line. Michael, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you.
Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Here and Now.